targeting civilian infrastructure in Gaza, including a school hosting displaced people. Iran says it supports international efforts to hold Israel accountable for the war crimes it's committing in the Gaza Strip. And the Lebanese media says three journalists have been killed in Israel's latest round of the strikes against Lebanon. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. It's been more than a month and a half since Tel Aviv launched its deadly war on Gaza. The regime is relentlessly pounding the besieged strip with airstrikes and shelling, keeping the Palestinians there in a perpetual state of pain and suffering. Dozens of Palestinians have been killed in fresh strikes targeting civilian infrastructure. They include a school hosting displaced people in an area west of Jabalia in northern Gaza. Elsewhere in the north, at least nine houses were hit in the Beit Lahia region. At least 25 Palestinians were killed in the Nusayrat camp in central Gaza as well. Hospitals aren't spared from Israeli bombardments either. Doctors Without Borders has expressed concerns about the situation at Al-Shifa Hospital, one of the hardest hit health facilities since the war began. The death toll has surpassed the 13,300, most of them women and kids. Around 70 Israeli troopers have been killed since the regime launched a ground offensive in Gaza. Now, despite international calls for the protection of hospitals, Israel keeps targeting medical facilities in Gaza. On Monday, it was the turn of the Indonesia hospital, where at least a dozen people were killed in an attack. A spokesman for the Gaza Health Ministry has asked international bodies to take action against such crimes.
This hospital will be the last location for medical care in the north of Gaza. The Israeli occupation is trying to turn the Indonesian hospital into a mass grave, the same as what happened at Al-Shifa Medical Complex. We are asking organizations to take action to protect over 200 doctors and over 500 patients and over 2,000 displaced people. Even now, the situation doesn't allow us to get people in or out of the Indonesian hospital. The Israeli occupation is trying to render this hospital out of order and is also targeting the kidney dialysis unit, which holds a large number of displaced people, patients, and doctors inside. We ask countries around the world for field hospitals for the north of Gaza after all other hospitals went out of order, and to have medical teams capable of dealing with conditions as what is seen there now, and fully equipped to be able to service the north and south of the Gaza Strip.
The World Health Organization has sounded the alarm about the humanitarian situation in Gaza. It's warning about the risk of disease outbreak as Israel keeps relentlessly bombing the Palestinian territory.
I would continue to describe the humanitarian health situation as catastrophic. Our main concern is ensuring that the people of Gaza get access to healthcare, both urgent healthcare for the large number of traumatic injuries as a result of the war, and also other essential health services, such as obstetric care for the 180-odd women that are going to be delivering every day, particularly those needing a cesarean section or having a complication of their pregnancy. Similarly, we need to be providing care for those with chronic conditions, high blood pressure, heart disease, and diabetes. We're also extremely concerned about the risk of disease outbreaks because of the overcrowding. We've got over 1.5 million people displaced, very large proportion of them in these overcrowded, unsanitary schools and collective centres where there is limited access to clean water, where limited access to food. There is very, very, very poor sanitation, toilets overflowing, open defecation, and we're already starting to see increased rates of infections such as respiratory infections, diarrhoea, jaundice now, suggesting possible hepatitis, childhood infections, terrible skin infections like scabies.
The Iranian president has renewed his call for a unified effort to pressure the Israeli regime to end its onslaught against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Brian Raisa described Israel's attacks on innocent women and children as tantamount to acts of terrorism. He expressed support for efforts to hold Tel Aviv accountable for its war crimes and the International Criminal Court. He also slammed Washington for fueling the Israeli killing machine and preventing international bodies from doing their job. Raisi was addressing an emergency summit of the BRICS group of major emerging economies over the war on Gaza. During a virtual meeting, the South African president accused Israel of war crimes and genocide, urging a unified action to end what he called a historical injustice. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas saying it's nearing a truce agreement with Israel. That according to a statement posted on social media, quoting Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh. There are some reports suggesting that negotiations mediated by Qatar are underway to establish a ceasefire in Gaza. The possible deal reportedly includes a five-day truce in return for the release of between 50 and 100 Israeli captives held by Hamas. Haniyeh also reportedly said that the resistance movement has delivered its response to Qatar over the agreement. Now, the Lebanon's Hezbollah movement saying it's an integral part of the resistance front in the region and is in a state of war with Israel. The movement's deputy secretary general says that Tel Aviv aims to terrorize Palestinians and force them to abandon resistance by massacring innocent people in the Gaza Strip. Sheikh Naim Qassem said that a regime also seeks to crush the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. He urged Arab and Islamic countries to do more for Palestinians and protect them from Israeli crimes, rather than just supplying food aid to war-torn Gaza. Lebanese television channel Al-Mayadin says that the Israeli regime has deliberately targeted its media team in southern Lebanon, killing three of them. The attack killed Al-Mayadin's correspondent Farah Omar and cameraman Rabbi Memari, as well as a contributor to the channel. The channel's director said that the Israeli attack was a direct assault on journalists just after they finished their live broadcast from South Lebanon. Israel has frequently bombarded southern Lebanon since October 8th. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah has also launched rocket and artillery attacks on Israel in solidarity with the resistance in Gaza. On that note from Beirut, let's bring in Sundas Al-Assad, a Lebanese journalist. Good to have you with us, Sundas. So you're a journalist yourself, and we hear that you've been a friend of the Al-Mayadin reporter. So tell us in the first place, what does it mean to hit journalists in the first place?
First of all, heartfelt condolences for all the media figures, for Al-Mayadin and for Press TV and all the pro-resistance access media platforms. It saddens me to speak about Farah today. Farah has been a courageous heroine in the media battle against the Zionist aggression. She has been deliberately killed because she has been conveying the true message about what's going on in South Lebanon. It was killed and assassinated with her colleagues because Al-Mayadin has been, since the onset of this aggression, has been playing an influential role in the battle, because we know that today the battle is not only the battle in the field, it's also media war that we have with the Zionist entity. The Al-Mayadin stuff has been targeted because Al-Mayadin has chosen to speak the truth, to challenge the narrative of the mainstream media. And we know that the Zionist entity doesn't respect international laws or international conventions, and they, just as they slaughter the babies and slaughter women in Gaza, they target the civilians in Lebanon, and they target this the journalists as well, because those as far as their distort their image and conceal their true image and true bloody nature to the world.
And Sundas, would such murders and killing of journalists, would they kind of dent their job? Because they are there to cover the realities and the truth. Press TV correspondents also were hit elsewhere, and also Al Alam Bureau was also hit. So whoever is covering the facts on the ground, They are being directly targeted. So as a journalist, would you believe that such murders would impact the process of reporting facts, and would journalists let go of their goals and aspirations and stop their job?
Definitely no. The Zionist aggression is idiot enough. They think that by killing the journalists that they will throw us from continuing our mission. And that's absolutely too wrong and too misleading for the Zionists. As far as they killing us, as Imam Khomeini has said once, that by killing us, you get us quiet, aware about your bloody nature, about your heinous crimes, about your notorious colonialist project. They can't throw us from doing our job. We are in the media. We know that the sacrifices are dear, are high, and we are ready to pay those prices. To the school of Sayyida Zainab, and Sayyida Zainab has been has played this strong media role in concealing the truth about what happened in Karbala. It's the same here. Karbala is repeated now in Lebanon and in Palestine. It's our role to perpetuate the mission of those martyrs, the mission of those journalists. As journalists, is to tell the other side of the story, the true side of the story, actually. What our people here in West Asia are suffering. Yesterday, Farah Hamar was covering the story of the three girls who were killed by the Zionist enemy. She was covering the story, the steadfastness of the Southern Lebanese who live next to the borders. She has been working hardly until the minute of her martyrdom. Unfortunately, no one will condemn this crime in the so-called international community and the so-called feminist groups and organization. We saw what they have done regarding the so-called Mahsa Amini cause in Iran. But no one will speak up. Time. No one will speak about the deliberate killing of Farah Hamar, because we are living in a world, in a jungle of double standards. This will make us a quiet persistence on perpetuating the message of those journalists and until the entire collapse of this colonial entity, inshallah.
Okay. Thank you so much for that, and condolences to you too. Sundus Al-Assad, Lebanese journalist in Beirut. Now, the European Union foreign policy chief saying that the bloc is facing growing animosity across the Muslim world and beyond over its pro-Israel stance in the war on Gaza. Josep Borrell said that the EU should show more empathy for the loss of Palestinian civilian lives. He warned that such ill feelings could undermine EU's diplomatic support for Ukraine. He made a comment after his five-day trip to several countries in West Asia. Borrell said that during his trip, many Arab activists criticized the 27-nation bloc for its double standard over the Israeli war on Gaza. The Hamas representative office in Tehran has commemorated Ahmed Bahr, the vice speaker of the Palestinian Legislative Council, who was killed during Israeli assaults on the Gaza Strip. Salman Kujri has a report.
A ceremony has been held at the representative office of Hamas movement in Tehran to commemorate Ahmed Bahr, the vice speaker of the Palestinian Legislative Council and a member of the Hamas movement, who was martyred during Israeli attacks in the Gaza Strip. The ceremony was attended by Hamas representative in Tehran, Khaled Qaddoumi. A number of Iranian military and state officials, including members of the Iranian parliament, were also present at the ceremony.
The martyr, Sayyid Ahmed Bahr, he's a iconic struggling figure in Palestine, and he is a statue at the level of the importance of Palestinian issue. He was one of the brothers and fellows of Sheikh Ahmad Yassin, the founder of the Hamas movement, and he used to be a straightforward a state man, and he is a transparent fellow when he is to address the Palestinian issue. He is always to address it in a very solid, bold, and straightforward fellow.
Martyr Ahmad Bahr was a great personality who stood against the Israeli aggressions until his last moment of life and did not flee his homeland. What Israel has done in the occupied lands has proved to the world that it is an aggressive regime which is just killing children and women in order to protect itself. But we warn Israel that we will sue the case at international courts and will bring the main perpetrators to justice. With all these ongoing Israeli atrocities, Israel will definitely be the main loser of the war and will collapse.
Since October 7th, Israel has bombed much of Gaza to rubble, ordered the depopulation of the entire northern half of the strip, and made around two-thirds of Gazans homeless. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said Israeli attacks had destroyed or damaged at least 45% of Gaza's housing units.
The resistance of Palestinians, especially resistance forces against the Israeli occupying regime, was a big slap in the face of the Zionist regime. The brutalities of the Israeli forces show that they have no other option but to kill children and women because they cannot stand against resistance forces. This is the beginning of the collapse of the Zionist regime, and because of its atrocities in the Gaza Strip, this regime has been hated and detested by world people more than ever before.
International officials say a humanitarian crisis for the 2.3 million residents of Gaza is entering a new, more dire phase as the Israeli war continues.
Palestinian Resistance Front says despite all Israeli atrocities in the occupied lands, resistance will continue until the full liberation of Palestine from the clutches of the Israeli regime. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
A sit-in has been held in Rome to commemorate thousands of children slaughtered by Israel in Gaza. The initiative took place on the World's Children's Day, but disregarded by politicians and most Italian mainstream media. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has kicked off tactical military drills in the country's southeastern Kerman province. Several units of the RGC forces, including artillery and rockets, taking part in the maneuvers. Chief of Staff of the Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Bagheri, observed the exercise to evaluate the forces' offensive and defensive readiness. The top general also visited the Martyrs' graveyard in Kerman, paying tribute to Iran's top anti-terror icon, Lieutenant General Soleimani. He held the general as a role model for freedom seekers across the world. Bagheri said that the youth in the countries that back the resistance front will not allow the global arrogance to have a foothold on their soil. He said that a clear example of that is the young Palestinian people. And with that, we come to the end of this newscast from Tehran. Thank you for being with us.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics.
all produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
China has announced that its Belt and Road Initiative BRI infrastructure project has generated $2 trillion in contracts, signaling the mega project's success and popularity around the world. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Global Times, the Belt and Road CEO Conference was held on October 17th, which is an opening event of the Third Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation, BRF. With participation from over 80 countries and regions, including over 20 minister-level officials, more than 30 heads of foreign business associations, and nearly 60 representatives from Fortune Global 500 companies, the conference had over 1,200 attendees. The event has yielded remarkable achievements, whether it's the number of projects, the countries involved, or the contracted amount, they all exceeded the previous CEO conference. The conference issued the Belt and Road CEO Conference Beijing Declaration, emphasizing five key points: a commitment to open cooperation, deepening connectivity, promoting green development, advancing digital economic cooperation, and adhering to compliance and fulfilling social responsibilities. These points represent the consensus of entrepreneurs from various countries attending the conference. They not only reflect the representative spirit and principles of entrepreneurs in jointly building the Belt and Road Initiative BRI, but also provide a specific direction for future collective efforts. Against the backdrop of deliberate disruptions to the global industrial and supply chain systems, this declaration stands as a consensus statement from the global business community, demonstrating confidence in unity and cooperation and sending out a strong message of our time. The business community is a participant, contributor, and driving force in the BRI development. The enthusiasm of enterprises largely reflects the appeal and attraction of the BRI. The CEO Conference, as an innovative initiative of the second BRF in 2019, has provided a more vibrant platform for connecting and negotiating between Chinese and foreign enterprises. Recently, nearly 300 Chinese and foreign representatives signed agreements covering various fields such as infrastructure, clean energy, artificial intelligence, biomedicine, financial services, modern agriculture, and rail transportation. Enterprises will continue to play a crucial role in the BRI in the future. The BRI cooperation provides many entrepreneurs with opportunities and platforms to showcase their abilities. The Belt and Road CEO Conference called for more entrepreneurs to participate in the construction of this path of opportunities and prosperity, benefiting the world while achieving their own greater development. In addition to the Belt and Road CEO Conference, the Jakarta-Bandung high-speed railway officially began operations, marking Indonesia's entry into the era of high-speed rail. Chinese railway manufacturer CRRC Corp. also signed an agreement with Serbia's Transport and Infrastructure Ministry in Beijing to sell high-speed rail carriages to Serbia. The birth and implementation of these cooperative projects are inseparable from the nurturing of the BRI and the dedication of numerous enterprise builders. As Chinese President Xi Jinping emphasized when addressing a welcome banquet for guests attending the third Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation, the achievements of Belt and Road Cooperation are neither a windfall nor made with others' almsgiving and charity, but are earned by governments and enterprises and the peoples of participating countries with their diligence, wisdom, and courage. Enterprises are the most active cells in the development of the BRI. As the BRI involves so many countries and faces different cultural customs, legal systems, and levels of development, the entrepreneurial spirit of building the Belt and Road must be open and inclusive. It is essential to respect local culture, abide by local laws and regulations, pursue win-win cooperation, and demonstrate a strong sense of social responsibility in serving the local people. At the same time, building the Belt and Road is also a process of extending economic globalization to a global scale. During this process, larger-scale world-class international enterprises will inevitably emerge or be created. Seizing the opportunity can lead to development and growth, and some enterprises may even achieve great accomplishments. Both enterprises and entrepreneurs need to have sufficient imagination to contribute to the success of the BRI. The BRI originated from China but belongs to the whole world. With the advancement of the high-quality construction of the BRI, more enterprises from participating countries as well as other countries have jointly constructed a more diverse and vibrant economic ecosystem for the Belt and Road. The foundation and the directions established for BRI cooperation over the past decade have increased the confidence of the business community, and the potential that the BRI may create in the future has ignited the passion of visionary entrepreneurs. Although there may be obstacles ahead, it will undoubtedly witness the blooming of more flowers. China Daily also wrote in this regard, "The Belt and Road Initiative, as it advances, will consistently yield substantial cooperation, investment, and growth opportunities for businesses on a global scale." And that is what senior government officials and business executives have recently said. Speaking at the Belt and Road CEO Conference of the Third Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation in Beijing, they said that through such collaboration, Chinese and foreign companies can enhance their research capabilities, embrace cutting-edge technology, and refine their application expertise. These activities can potentially reshape their growth trajectory and play a pivotal role in fostering sustainable economic development. Vice Premier He Lifeng said at the conference that China is willing to expand mutual market access with countries involved in the BRI, create more trade cooperation platforms, build up a diversified financing system, deepen production capacity cooperation, and expand two-way investment. The vice premier stressed that China encourages businesses from all participating countries to actively promote cooperation in areas such as big data, artificial intelligence, and new energy. This will drive the development of BRI toward a greener, healthier, and more intelligent direction.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
You'll recall that yesterday when we were discussing the topic, as we've been going through every night, trying to build up to the climax and the conclusion, we looked at the issue of the youth and the guidance that they need. And we talked about the fact that we understand this to be a give and take relationship, that the elders of the community, the leaders, the scholars, they have an obligation to give, but at the same time, and the youth are taking, but at the same time, the youth also have to give. We mentioned that it is not enough for it to be a one-way form of guidance. The youth need to want it for themselves to learn about the religion. We reflected on the verse from chapter 18, Surah Al-Kahf, where Allah told us that those were youth who believed in their Lord. And so Allah says, وَزِدْنَاهُمْ هُدَىٰ, that we increased them in guidance. But the key of that verse was that they were youth who believed in their Lord. They had that active awareness of God. They did what they had to do to protect their faith in those very tumultuous times. And then Allah reciprocated. And so we drew that conclusion that we as a community need to work together, but also that the next generation need to also want to have that guidance, and that they actually also are actively seeking it out. We move on tonight in the next stage of our review on this topic. And although up until now we've looked at many of the challenges that our community face, not only the youth, but many individuals, actually our entire Muslim community, our followers of Ahlul Bayt of all ages and persuasions are going through challenges and difficulties in maintaining their conviction and in their faith in these very difficult times. We recognize also at the same time that we have a lot of tools in our arsenal, in our disposal. If we start to reflect even on the du'as that we recite, that the du'as that the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt have given us, they actually somehow allude to a lot of this corruption and, you know, excessiveness in the usage of technology. You know, if we just think about how many times we can't sleep at night, we have insomnia, and we'll go onto our favorite app and we'll just start scrolling and looking at content, reading articles that have no benefit, watching YouTube videos that are completely irrelevant, you know, how things are made. Okay, it's great, I know how they make a bathtub. How does that benefit me in life? And then I'm reminded of the dua, if I'm not mistaken, it's the dua for dhuhr namaz. Allahumma inni a'udhu bika min nafsin la tashba, wa min qalbin la yakhsha, wa min ilmin la yanfa. O Allah, I seek protection and refuge in you from knowledge which does not benefit me. Right? Why am I wasting time on things that have no benefit to me? No usage in this world, but I'm sitting there scrolling for hours and hours on end, as I see many times our youth do on TikTok, from one video to the other, just hours and hours go, spending, watching people do frivolous things. And many times this is haram with the music that is there, the actions that are going on. But these du'as that we have, brothers and sisters, that we have from the imams and obviously the Prophet, if we begin to sit and reflect upon them, like this one, I seek refuge in you, Allah, from knowledge which gives me no benefit. It would be better to say, okay, I can't sleep, let me pick up the app of the Quran and read Quran. Maybe go through a lecture. Find something that will give me benefit. If not religious, maybe something to do with your school studies. Something that will offer us a benefit in this world and in the world to come. You know, something that will give us that betterment to make ourselves better believers. And so as I conclude in the next couple of minutes, as we say that this technology has benefits, as we've said, we're all using it tonight. We're using a microphone, we're using lights, we're using speakers. But we have to recognize that there are also impacts to our health. Our spiritual health suffers. Our mental health can go through challenges by engaging in this. And as we mentioned, even in the theme of our topic, that this excessive usage of the social media applications, when it's focusing on me, myself, and I, this can get us to forget ourselves, our surroundings, to forget Allah, where we're only focused on the self, on the physical self, I mean, and not worried about our true inner self. When we forget Allah, and you know, when we forget Allah, as the hadith or the verse of the Quran mentions, Allah says that don't be like those, He says, who have forgotten themselves, because they end up even forgetting Allah. Right? When we forget our true nature of who we are as human beings, that we have to have concern for others, we have a concept of humility in Islam, of humbleness. You know, where Allah says, for example, don't attribute piety to yourselves. فَلَا تُزَكُّوا أَنفُسَكُمْ. Don't think of yourselves to be these great pious people. Right? You may be a good believer, but don't brag about it. But technology and these applications make us to brag about even our perceived acts of worship. And so we have to be careful, brothers and sisters, that yes, we use technology within the limits, that we are, you know, not going to go to the extremes. We have to moderate what we are doing. We have to recognize that these applications are there, but many of them are not there to help or benefit. They are there more to continue to feed our ego, to get us to be more concerned about our own personal image. We forget about our Muslim believers. We forget about mu'mineen around the world who are suffering. We forget about our own community members who are going through troubles and struggles in life. And ultimately that this will be our own downfall, right? It'll be our loss that we will have to face. It won't affect others, it will affect us. And obviously that effect that we will face in this world is minimal. What we face in the world to come will be even greater, because we will actually reap what we have sown in this world by forgetting our true nature as Muslims, those who submit to Allah. We'll forget our connection to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which obviously in the world to come will be manifest in a way which we could never have even imagined. And ultimately, you know, if we live to see the time of the Imam, this self-centeredness, this egotism that I have, this I am the center of attraction, may even mean that we refuse to support the 12th Imam. It may mean that we will be like those people in the camp of Umar ibn Asad, where Imam Hussein alayhi salam could stand in front of them as he did on the day of Ashura and deliver a lecture and sermon and words of admonition. And they would ignore him, and the Imam would reply to them that the reason why you are hearing my words but you're not listening and taking heed is because you have filled your stomachs with the impermissible. Not only their stomachs, but their minds were probably also filled with the haram. And God forbid we get to that level, brothers and sisters, where our minds are filled with the impermissible, that the Imam makes that call and we refuse to hear the Imam and his call for support.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahim Kareem Adi Ali حالي حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Before the Israeli war, 70% of Palestinian children in the Gaza Strip already suffered from varying health issues, including malnutrition, anemia, and a weakened immune system. But that figure has now increased to more than 90% as a result of Israel's brutal war on Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Monitor has covered this story and tells us more. A senior Hamas official has said the Israeli regime is waging a war of starvation on the Palestinians of the Gaza Strip, stressing that closure of crossings to the besieged territory has worsened the food crisis in Gaza, and the few aid convoys that enter the enclave cannot meet public demand. Osama Hamdan, a member of the Palestinian Resistance Movement's political bureau, said at a press briefing in Beirut, Lebanon, on Saturday, 18th of November, he said, "The Zionist enemy has adopted the policy of starvation against children and ordinary people in Gaza. The food convoys that have entered Gaza meet only 10% of public demand." Osama Hamdan added, "Mass killing of people, starvation and bombardment of hospitals are all meant to drive our compatriots out of northern Gaza. International Muslim and Arab institutions must fulfill their responsibilities with regards to the stoppage of invaders' crimes. Silence and inaction will push the situation towards further chaos and disorder." Osama Hamdan said the Palestinian resistance groups have pledged not to back down from realization of their nation's ideals, the most significant of which are liberation of the occupied territories and gaining full sovereignty over those territories. The senior Hamas official noted, "We will be a strong barrier against the plans of the invaders. Displacement will not be a matter of concern anymore, but rather liberation of our land and return of Palestinians to their homeland. We will deal a fatal blow to the invaders, and the entire world will soon hear the news of our victory." Osama Hamdan went on to point out the high number of casualties among the Israeli military. He said, "The Ezzedine al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of the Palestinian Hamas movement, has inflicted heavy blows against the Zionist enemy." Further remarks, Osama Hamdan said, "The Zionist enemy is committing crimes against Palestinians of Gaza round the clock. The enemy perpetrates crimes in areas that it claims to be safe. 43% of victims used to be residents of southern Gaza. The occupiers do not differentiate between residents of northern and southern Gaza." He said the Israeli regime has attacked the most sacred job in the world by bombing hospitals. The Hamas official added, "Murders and crimes in Gaza have affected people from all walks of life, including aid workers, medical staff, and what happened in Shifa Hospital falls within the framework of crimes being committed by the occupying regime." He said the invaders took away the bodies of a number of martyrs from inside the hospital to an undisclosed location. Osama Hamdan said the Israeli military, by means of false allegations, have turned Al-Shifa Hospital into a military barracks. Hamdan added, "We hold the Biden administration responsible for a raid on Al-Shifa Hospital and view it as a direct accomplice of Israeli crimes. If it were not for sake of President Joe Biden and his administration, the silence of international community, such crimes would never have been committed by the Israeli regime in Gaza." Osama Hamdan finally called for continuation of pro-Palestinian demonstrations all around the world. Humanitarian agencies say since Israel imposed a total blockade and siege on Gaza on 7th of October, 8 convoys have barely trickled through, meaning they can provide only a drop in the ocean of what the Gaza's 2.3 million population would require. According to the advocacy group Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, the Israeli regime has sharply escalated a war of starvation against the civilian population of the Gaza Strip. CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story. A United Nations organization that provides food assistance has warned people in Gaza are facing an immediate possibility of starvation as fuel shortages cripple food production and distribution in the enclave. The United Nations World Food Programme, WFP's executive director, Cindy McCain, said, in a statement on Thursday, 16th of November, she said, "Supplies of food and water are practically non-existent in Gaza, and only a fraction of what is needed is arriving through the borders." According to the World Food Programme, only 10% of necessary food supplies has entered Gaza Strip since the start of the war, with fuel shortages severely impacting bread production as well as the distribution of essential humanitarian aid, with aid trucks unable to reach their destinations. Meanwhile, Cindy McCain said, "The only hope is opening another safe passage for humanitarian access to bring life-saving food into Gaza. Bread is scarce or non-existent in Gaza as fuel shortages have triggered a crippling halt in bread production across the territory." Of the 1,129 trucks that have entered Gaza via the Rafah border crossing with Egypt, only 447 were carrying food supplies. Only 25% of shops contacted by the World Food Programme remain open in Gaza. Others are out of essential food items. The United Nations agency, the World Food Programme, reports the small quantities of food that can be found are being sold at alarmingly inflated prices and are of little use without the ability to cook, forcing some to survive on one meal a day. The World Food Programme says it has provided emergency food assistance to more than 700,000 displaced people in Gaza. It expects to reach more than 1 million people over the next few weeks. The Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story. The United Nations World Food Programme, WFP, renewed its call for sustained humanitarian access to Gaza as stocks inside the besieged coastal enclave run out. Corinne Fleischer, the World Food Programme's regional director for West Asia and North Africa, said, "Every day that passes pushes more and more people closer to starvation." The World Food Programme has food for 244,000 people close to the border with Gaza. The United Nations agency said more supplies are arriving in northeastern Egypt, where an assistant hub is being set up. Samer Abdeljaber, the World Food Programme's country director in Palestine, said, "Heart-wrenchingly, hundreds of people are queuing for hours every day to get bread rations at bakeries across Gaza, while food is there, ready for distribution just across the border in Egypt." Recently, the head of UNRWA, the United Nations relief agency that works in the Gaza Strip, Philip Lazzarini, warned that people of Gaza are being choked by the continuous bombardment of their territory. Philip Lazzarini said the continuous bombardment of Gaza, together with the siege, are choking Gaza and its people. He continued that more than 700,000 women, children and men now live in UNRWA schools and shelters. Philip Lazzarini added, "Basic services are crumbling in Gaza. Everything is running out, food, water, medicine and fuel." Lazzarini said Gazans feel dehumanized and abandoned by the world. He added, "We must increase the volume of aid and use other crossings, including those with the occupied Palestinian territories like the Kerem Abu Salem crossing." You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The issue of Palestine is the first issue of the world of Islam by Ayatollah Khamenei. The colonial British government is at top of usurping Palestine. October 1st, 2011. More than six decades have passed since the tragic occupation of Palestine. All the main causes of this bloody tragedy have been identified, and the colonialist English government is the most important cause. the policies, weapons and military, security, economic and cultural power of the English government and other arrogant Western and Eastern governments were put to the service of this great oppression. Under the ruthless clutches of the occupiers, the defenseless people of Palestine were massacred and forced out of their homes. Until today, even 1% of the human and civil tragedy which was carried out at that time by the claimants of civilization and ethics has not been properly portrayed, and this tragedy has not had its fair share in the media and visual arts. The owners of visual and cinematic arts and Western movie mafias have not been willing to allow this to happen. An entire nation was massacred and displaced in silence.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Certain instances of resistance emerged at the beginning, which were harshly and ruthlessly crushed. From outside Palestinian borders, and mainly from Egypt, a number of men with Islamic motives made certain efforts which were not sufficiently supported and could not have an effect on the scene. Afterwards, there were full-scale and classical wars between a few Arab countries and the Zionist army. Egypt, Syria, and Jordan mobilized their military forces, but the unconditional, massive, and increasing military and financial support of America, England, and France for the Zionist regime overwhelmed Arab armies. Not only did they fail to help the Palestinian nation, but they also lost an important portion of their territories during these wars. The Islamic Republic's proposal for solving the issue of Palestine, October 1, 2011. The solution of the Islamic Republic to the issue of Palestine and this old wound is a clear and logical proposal that is based on political wisdom accepted by global public opinion, and it has been presented in detail previously. We neither propose a classical war with the armies of Islamic countries, nor do we propose throwing Jewish immigrants into the sea or intervention of the United Nations and other international organizations.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.